Bird enthusiasts are gearing up this week for the first of three hatchlings of the Decorah, Iowa bald eagles. And tens of thousands of people are expected to be watching an internet live stream of all the action from the webcam that is perched near the eagle's nest. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, March the 21st. Will you be watching? The live hatch watch is on. Three eggs were laid in late February, and the first egg is expected to hatch on Friday or Saturday, with each remaining egg hatching about a week apart. But that won't be the end of the excitement. If last year is any indication, millions will tune into the live stream to watch the bald eagle pair tend to their eaglets, sharing the hunting and nesting duties. We will talk about our fascination with eagles this hour. And our guest expert will answer your questions about all things eagles at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, or, of course, tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. By the way, I have put a link to the Decorah Eagles webcam, the live stream, on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page if you want to check that out, if you're not familiar with that. Our guest is Marge Gibson, founder and executive director of the Raptor Education Group Incorporated, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to caring for injured or orphaned birds, as well as educating the public on wildlife issues. It's based in Anago. And we have also provided a link to raptoreducationgroup.org on our Facebook page. And Marge Gibson joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, just to be clear, you are not a part of the Decorah Eagles webcam project, correct?
No, we're just a fan like everyone else.
Right. You're familiar with it and you've watched it. Why do you suppose this is so popular? Looking at this news release on the live hatch watch for the Decorah Eagles, and it says here that last year, this 200 million views occurred on this live stream of this eagle's nest. Why are so many of us so fascinated with eagles?
You know, it's really been a wonderful educational opportunity, and I think that any time, first of all, wildlife tends to be something that is mysterious to a lot of us. We don't have privy to seeing the inner workings of their family life, but this allows us to be really up close and personal without the birds knowing that they're being observed, and it really has given people a new perspective and a new intimacy, I think, with eagles, which has been incredible.
Yeah, and I really have learned a lot. Just not only can you watch, but then there's some information and there's a conversation that you can participate in. I've now figured out how to tell the difference between a female a bald eagle and a male bald eagle. I guess I didn't know that the female bald eagle is actually the larger of the two.
That's right. She is. On most raptors, the female is larger.
And that's because she has more work to do, or what?
Well, you know, there's a lot of biologic reasons, but in part, at least, that is true. Her body is larger. The egg is quite large for the size of the bird. So biologically, that's important for her to be the larger.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about the biology of the bald eagle. I think it was prior to February that there was a release that said that the Decorah eagles have returned. They have returned to that nest. Is this something that once a pair gets together, they nest in the same place year after year?
Right. We call it a traditional nest. And basically, when a pair of bald eagles or many other species mate, it is a bond that lasts for life, or at least till the death of one of the birds. And it's the nest site goes on for, I mean, it's a traditional nest. I mean, it can be, as long as, 20, 30 years in one site.
Wow. Yeah, so the hatchling, or the first eggs, were three eggs were laid in February. That's the time that they are laid, and how long? And I guess it takes a month or so for or more.
It takes a little over a month, 33 to 36 days to hatch, depending on, you know, various things, weather and how tight the parents are sitting on the eggs.
Mm-hmm. And each egg will hatch a week apart. So it's I guess there must be a reason for that.
All things in biology make sense. Huh? They hatch about a week apart. First of all, they're laid on different days, but the last chick that hatches is usually the smallest, of course, and that one is in the eagle circles. We know it's kind of the extra chick. In other words, if something happens to their older one, they have another one that's going to be coming up.
Oh, really? So, and three is the typical size of a nest?
Actually, no. Two is very typical. Three is a little unusual, and usually only really experienced families, experienced couples can handle having three youngsters.
Do we know if this pair is an experienced couple?
They seem to be, and they're not banded. I mean, we haven't been following them for longer than just a few years, but they certainly did really well last year, and it appears that they are.
So tell us what's going to happen with, you know, the hatching and on. What can we expect if we're watching?
Well, the female is going to be what we call sitting tight, and she's going to be looking a little bit anxious, I guess, and she's waiting for that egg to pip or to start opening, and they are communicating with the chick even now. They are making little sounds within the egg, and the chick hears them as well, so there's a bonding that's going on even when the chick is in the egg, and she'll start paying more attention. You'll see her start sort of standing up and looking underneath her and kind of shifting from side to side a little more than she has been just sitting on the eggs. And then soon, you'll see her, standing a little more and giving the chick a little more space as it hatches and within the first few days.
Mm-hmm. And once that first is it called an eaglet when it first hatches?
Yes, it's an eaglet.
And once that happens, I noticed last year seeing Dad come back and with rabbits and all sorts of things. I mean, does that eaglet get a meal right away?
You know, they do, and that surprises a lot of people. They eat meat right away. The parent doesn't pre-digest it or anything like that. And you'll see the mother and the parent, both parents actually, taking small pieces of rabbit or whatever prey that he's brought back and taking tiny, tiny little pieces and putting it into the chick's mouth. But they eat really vigorously right away.
Yeah, I was a little worried last year when I saw, I think they had three eaglets last year too, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe I'm wrong, but it looked like one was, you know, was the bigger one, and one was, there was one that seemed to be sort of the runt of the litter, so to speak, and I was worried that that one wasn't going to get enough food, but he did, or she did, and so mom and Dad know to try to give everybody a share.
Right, they do. And if there's enough prey, if there's enough food, it's really not usually an issue. But if food is really low, then of course, you know, the little one is the one who doesn't get fed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so pretty soon we presume that we will have in 3 weeks or so, we'll have three eaglets. And then Mom and Dad really do share in these duties. Once Dad comes back with a rabbit, maybe Mom will take off and go hunting for a while.
Absolutely, they do. And that's one of the really incredible things that this video has done. And people are able to see and they're able to watch the home life and realize that both parents are so actively involved in raising the youngsters. And it's very much, a partnership, very much a pairing of these birds.
We are talking about eagles, holding an Eagles 101 class of sorts on the occasion of the Decorah Eagles, the Decorah, Iowa Bald Eagles, getting ready to raise another brood of eaglets. There are three eggs waiting to be hatched in Decorah, Iowa. The first is expected to hatch maybe Friday, maybe Saturday. And we're wondering if you're a big fan of the Decorah Eagles or eagles in general. What is it that you appreciate most about them? What have you learned about eagles, perhaps, if you have been a fan of this this webcam, this live streaming of the Decorah Eagles? Or what is it that you would still like to know? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And we'd also be happy to hear about your eagle sightings, your interactions with eagles here in Wisconsin, or maybe even in your own backyard. It's going to be a cloudy day today, periods of rain in the north and west, partly cloudy in the south and east. We can expect high temperatures about 55 in the north and another warm one in southern Wisconsin, with high temperatures expected to get near 82 degrees. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about eagles this hour with Marge Gibson, who is founder and executive director of the Raptor Education Group, Incorporated. It's based in Antigo. We are talking about eagles in part because the Decorah, Iowa Eagles are ready to welcome in their first eaglet. The first hatch of three eggs is expected on Friday, but also because eagles are fascinating. And we welcome your questions about eagles at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Coming up later today on Larry Mueller's show, after 11 o'clock, he is continuing his year-long series on the 40th anniversary of the DNR's Endangered Species Law. Today, after 11, he and his guests will focus on the importance of citizen monitoring. And speaking of endangered species, eagles have made quite a recovery in Wisconsin over the last several years, haven't they, Marge Gibson?
You know, they really have. It's been a real success story for our state.
What has been attributed to this success?
Well, I think there's a number of things. Number one, they were put on the endangered species list, which is really an important step. It really calls attention to the fact that these birds are rare and that people need to pay special attention to protecting them, and there are special measures that are able to be enforced to make sure that the population, as it grows, is protected. Second of all, I think because of that additional education, people become more aware of them, and, the fascination, the natural fascination, grows with seeing them and really appreciating them for the amazing part of our environment that they are.
Mm-hmm. What caused the decline of the bald eagle?
Well, the use of DDT was a huge problem, that was a pesticide that was used in the 50s and 60s. And it caused eggshell thinning. And in a bird as large as an eagle, with the heavy weight of that bird, when they would sit on their eggs, that the egg would crack. And so they were not able to reproduce. And the same thing happened with ospreys, as a matter of fact. And then after the banning of DDT, the eggshell issue started to resolve, and they were able to reproduce more successfully. But by that time, their numbers had really decreased to a really dangerous level.
Do we know what the numbers are now?
Well, as of 2010, we had 1,247 active territories in our state, and that means, of course, two adults at a territory. The other statistic that we have, or when this started to be looked at, was in 1973. We only had 108. So you see that there's really quite a remarkable comeback.
Let's go to Rick in Nakusa, who has a question about the eagle recovery. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Very good. How are you?
Good, good. How are you, Marge?
I'm good.
Yeah. You kind of answered to what my initial question was. I guess a follow-up question, you know, what are current threats to the eagle population, if any? I know growing up, you know, in the 50s and early 60s, I didn't think I would, you know, ever see a eagle in the wild. I think back at that time, you know, before clean air and water regulations, they were having a lot of difficulty surviving in Wisconsin waterways. And with the kind of the current push seems for you know, deregulation, and lots of time, you know, they say it's because of jobs, it's killing jobs. But usually I think what they're talking about is, you know, environmental, you know, pollution, clean air and clear water standards. It looks like just the political climate that some of those regulations are going to, you know, probably be weakened, or that seems to be the big push.
So Rick, are you seeing eagles frequently?
Yes. Yes, we live right on the Wisconsin River, and we see, we live below the Nakusa Dam, and the eagles, the ones that stay here and don't go south, seem to kind of fly upriver to find open water so they can fish. So we have a pretty good, we didn't have as big of a population this last winter. Usually we'll, you know, have, you know, from 7 to 10, we'll kind of see. And this winter it was probably closer to a 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing both bald eagles and golden eagles, you know, in central Wisconsin.
Well, thank you very much for the call. Let's talk a little bit, Marge, about current threats to the eagle population.
Well, Rick does bring up a good point, and I think that the regulation of our waterways and the clean water situation that we had really did help our bald eagle population to come back, and it would be a very bad thing to see that go backwards, and I hope that doesn't happen. But, you know, I think that basically there are so many things that as our population grows, there's just more people to contend with, and so there's more interaction with the birds. There's more pesticide use on our part. More water runoff into our streams, and just all kinds of things from, you know, trapping to shootings and people just misunderstanding the birds themselves and, you know, having a negative interaction with them.
I understand that your group rehabbed 7 eagles that were suffering from lead poisoning last year.
Actually, we rehabilitated 76 bald eagles last year.
Wow.
We did have a large single poisoning in April of last year of 7 bald eagles that were poisoned at one site, which was the largest toxic event in the country.
Was that deliberate, or what were they? How did they get poisoned from lead?
That wasn't lead, actually. That was a toxin, and it was unintentional, but it was definitely human-caused. We do see, however, a lot of lead poisoning, and we had 27 cases last year in 2011 of lead poisoning in bald eagles. And so far this year, we've already had 5. So lead poisoning is a very serious issue to our bald eagle population.
And how are the eagles ingesting lead? Why is there so much lead poisoning?
Well, we still still use lead in fishing and hunting activities, and like lead sinkers in fishing and lead jigs. And people don't realize that, of course, if a fish swallows a lead sinker or has a jig in its mouth, and an eagle, you know, it's a large bird and can swallow a smaller fish in its entirety, and it swallows that, the lead, you know, stays in its system. And lead is heavy, so it kind of goes to the bottom of the digestive tract and is not excreted. It also doesn't, it doesn't disappear. So once an eagle is lead poisoned, you know, it's until somebody can chelate it. In other words, it has to come into care or it will die. The other way is we still use lead ammunition for hunting. And when an eagle, we know that they're carrion eaters. We see them by the side of the road, you know, eating something that has been hit by a car. But if a deer or another animal that's been shot with lead ammunition dies in the environment, they also, you know, are kind of our sanitation crew, and they're eating off that carcass, and they do ingest the lead that's in that meat. And it's, you know, it's deadly.
Yeah, and we have just 30 seconds before a news break. The group of seven eagles, that large group that were poisoned in a single event, what was that poison?
Well, it's still under investigation with Fish and Wildlife Service, and we're not allowed to discuss it more than just to say that it was an unintentional but definitely human-caused event.
We will talk more about eagles. And the eagle recovery in Wisconsin, and all things eagles. And we'll welcome your questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's the call of the bald eagle. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we are talking about bald eagles during this hour, in part because of the Decorah, Iowa bald eagles. The live hatch watch has been announced. The first of three eggs of the Decorah eagles is expected to hatch on Friday or Saturday. What would you like to know about eagles? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. On Facebook, you will find a link to the streaming video, the live webcam of the Decorah Eagles nest. I checked earlier this morning, and it looked like Mom was sleeping as she was nesting. We also have a link to our guest website, and that is raptoreducationgroup.org. Our guest is Marge Gibson, founder and executive director of the Raptor Education Group, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to caring for injured or orphaned birds, as well as educating the public on wildlife issues. I was wondering, Marge, I don't know if you're an expert on the call, but we got that bald eagle sound from the Cornell Ornithology Laboratory. It almost sounded like a baby or an eaglet to me, but apparently it was an adult. Do they have different calls for different reasons?
Yeah, people are always surprised at the kind of wispy call of a bald eagle. Mm-hmm. And in fact, on movies, when you there's an eagle flying, they often have a red-tailed hawk call to replace that, because it just sounds much more vigorous. They have, of course, a number of communication calls, but that's basically one of the alarm calls of a bald eagle.
Yeah. We were talking just before the news break about current threats to the bald eagle, which is seeing quite a recovery in Wisconsin over the last few years. Talked about certain environmental problems, pesticide use, and lead poisoning. We were talking about. We have a Facebook comment or question from one of our listeners. Brad on Facebook writes, "Are eagles still suffering from dioxin exposure?"
Well, to some degree, but certainly nothing like in the past. And, you know, it's something that we need to continue to monitor. Unfortunately, we've had, with all the state and federal cutbacks as well, the monitoring system is much less than it ever used to be. So, you know, I think we need to continue to realize that and continue to watch the population for various things, including that.
How many eagles are under your care at the Raptor Education Group Incorporated? I understand Reggie is a way I can say that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We have 17 right now, and several are getting ready to go back out and to be released. We don't have a youngster in yet, but last year we have a foster father that actually raises baby eagles for us. And people are always amazed that we have a male that does that duty. He's a non-releasable male. But as you can tell from watching the Decorah Eagles, the male is very involved in rearing youngsters. And last year we had 22 babies. We had a very active tornado year last year, so trees were coming down and babies, you know, falling out and injuring themselves on the way down. So they finished being raised at Raptor Education Group by our foster dad.
Aww.
And we had 22 little ones last year, so it was an exciting year.
Poor babies, and what a nice foster daddy. And he's non-releasable because he broke a wing or something, or...?
He was hit by a truck about 15 years ago and lost the tip of his wing, so he's not able to fly, but has been just priceless as far as providing an incredible service for us. He's a very busy spring and summer always, and last year he was, every time I'd bring a new baby and he looked at me like, are you kidding me? he was very busy, but you know, it really, it's really amazing to watch him work, and we hope this year to be able to get a camera on him so people can really appreciate what an incredible, incredible species they are. I mean, you know, to take babies that are not even his and raise them, and that means these babies are not imprinted to humans. So they, you know, they're raised by eagles, they know they're eagles, and they can go back into the environment with really without missing a beat.
Oh, and what a good idea. I hope you're able to do that. I bet you it would be another hit to be able to watch that. Now, when you release the eagles that you have rehabbed, Do you track them? Do you, you know, ban them? Do you see what they're doing?
Well, we certainly have. We've done different combinations of things, from, you know, the radio packs to satellite transmitters. Unfortunately, they're very expensive, and we're a nonprofit. The satellite transmitters are over $5,000 a piece. So, as a nonprofit, you know, that's very difficult for us to do. However, we have done that in the past, and they are banded. So, if they're found again, you know, we know that they're birds that have come through us and have been rehabilitated in one way or another. But it's always very exciting, you know, to release them and then to be able to hear from them again, and hopefully not in kind of a negative way, but sometimes people see them or see their number, which is really exciting.
Is your the Raptor Education Group facility open to the public?
We are in the summer. Of course, we're up, located up in Antigo, and often in the winter we're really snowed in until May, but this year things are a little bit different. But we have summer tours from beginning of June through September, and they are guided tours, and you do have to have a reservation, but you can do that easily by calling our education office, which is 715-623-2563, and get on one of our tours.
Well, I hope to be on one of those tours this summer. That would be fun.
Well, thank you. It would be great to see you.
James in Janesville joins us now. Hi, James.
Good morning. Thank you. Just a couple quick questions. I live in Janesville, right on the Rock River. I don't know, about a mile and a half south of downtown. And three summers ago and two summers ago, we had a pair down here, you know, right in a tree on the river. So my question is, you know, I saw them three summers ago and two summers ago. I didn't see them last summer. Is it common for them to have the same nesting site, or is it uncommon that I got to see them two summers in a row. And how often is it that you find pairs nesting in urban areas?
You know, we're starting to see pairs nesting in urban areas a little more. And I think one of the reasons is because, you know, our the regular territories that we think of are starting to be filled. And at least in the northern part of the state, we're seeing more of a saturated population, which has been kind of an amazing benefit, I guess, of our population. But they do stay in the same area, and if the pair was still together, they probably would still be there, unless you were seeing, you know, an unmated pair. They might have been what we call floaters. In other words, perhaps something happened to one mate, and the other one remains, you know, sort of a single, and it was just sort of, you know, occupying an area which without taking up a territory.
Thank you, James, for the call. Steve in Downsville is with us now. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, good morning. I had an interesting experience back in the early 90s. At that time, I was living up in Superior, and I had occasion to drive down to the Minong area. And just before I got there, I spotted a pair of bald eagles that were on the side of the road, which is a really unusual spot to see them. One was dead, and the other was standing over it, you could say mourning or maybe guarding. I was wondering what the guest was could comment on that, and what would happen. You'd mentioned, you know, they are usually pairing for life. So when the one dies, then what?
Oh, I'm sorry about that eagle. But was that eagle mourning?
Yes, absolutely. It was its mate that was hit. And you do see that, unfortunately. I mean, you know, it's this very sad situation. It does kind of drive home to people, though, that, you know, they have a very real connection and a very real sort of emotional attachment to each other, as any pair would. When one dies or is injured, it's kind of like our population in a way. In fact, birds are much more like our social structure than most mammals. Mammals that we know, dogs and cats, don't mate for life, but most avian species do, including bald eagles. And if one were to die, it's possible the other one would pick up another mate, but they don't have to. In other words, just like in our population, you know, sometimes, you know, you find another mate that's suitable and people remarry or have another mate, but it's not mandatory, and it's the same is true in their population.
Steve, thank you for the call. Jacob in Burlington is with us now. Hi, Jacob.
Hi. Yes, I also heard that there was a nesting pair in southeastern Wisconsin on or near Big Muskego Lake. I wonder if you've heard of that pair. Can we expect more of that type of spread of their population in southeastern Wisconsin? And if you know of the pair, do you know if they successfully fledged any young?
I'm not familiar with that specific pair, I'm sorry. But we are seeing more expanding into southern areas, and I think we can expect more of that as our population, you know, becomes stronger. And, you know, it is really interesting to see how they're adapting to more urban settings.
Yes, I know. I have friends and relatives who live in Appleton, and there are lots of eagles, and at least a pair that they are watching right in the middle of Appleton by the Fox River. So they're there too.
You can see why it's so important, like the Fox River. You know why that waterway stays unpolluted, so they can fish and, you know, feed their young and survive.
Yeah, we also have here in, I know there are lots of bald eagles along the Mississippi River, and here in south central Wisconsin, there's eagle watching days, usually in the middle of winter, sometime in January in the Prairie du Sac area, in part because that open water of the Wisconsin River is something that the eagles like to hang out at during the wintertime.
Right. We actually released 12 bald eagles during the eagle watching days this year in January. It's an amazing, the dam there really provides an incredible opportunity that water stays warm, so the water stays open, and therefore the fishing opportunities are really expanded. And it provides an incredible wintering area for our population, and especially for the youngsters. It's a great training area for them, and I suspect that we may have more success with the first year birds because they have that as kind of a safety catch there along the Wisconsin River.
Rhonda on Facebook writes, "We are truly blessed up here in northern Wisconsin. Literally not a single day goes by that I don't see at least one eagle. I often see and photograph 3 to 6 at a time. We have some who stay over the winter in the area and many who stop as they pass through. They are fascinating to watch, especially the sub-adults as they squabble like small children."
Oh, yes, they certainly do. It's really amazing. And because they live, we're dealing with a species that has a long life, they develop more slowly than a lot of species. So they are very much like, 3 and 4 year olds, as they kind of, go through sibling rivalry, and you're going to see some of that in the Decora nest this year, as you did last year. But they really are interesting, and they do provide a lot of amusement for people who are watching them, certainly.
Yeah. Well, leave us, if you will, with something we should know about eagles or keep in mind about eagles as we're watching the Decora eagles or others.
I think it's really important to remember that now that they're off the endangered list, that doesn't mean they're not protected. And I think it really puts more onus upon us as the public to keep a closer eye on them. No longer is the state or federal government sort of in charge of watching them. I mean, they are, but it puts more a responsibility on us to make sure that they have a good habitat, and that if something goes wrong, that we are able to bring it to someone's attention. Also, it's wonderful to be able to watch them and realize that they're not, as I like to say, an anonymous blob of feathers. They really have an amazing life, and really provide so much to us. And it really is up to us to carry out our responsibility and take good care of them.
Thank you very much for being with us. I hope to see you this summer.
Thank you.
Marge Gibson, founder and executive director of the Raptor Education Group, Incorporated, based in Antigo, Wisconsin. Quick check of the weather, and then we're going to get an update on the mysterious booming and banging and shaking going on in the city of Clintonville, Wisconsin. Have you heard about that one? We'll talk with the city's administrator in just a moment. It's going to be cloudy with periods of rain in northern and western Wisconsin today, partly cloudy in the south and east, highs ranging from the mid-50s to the low 80s. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 6 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, March the 21st. In Clintonville, city residents and experts alike are baffled by these mysterious booms and bangs that have rocked parts of the city since Sunday night, causing homes to shake and homeowners to worry. We are welcoming in the administrator for the city of Clintonville, Lisa Cuss. I'm sorry, did I pronounce your name correctly?
I believe so. It's Cuss.
Cuss, I'm sorry. So I understand that that you are experiencing more tremors and booming and banging this morning. What's going on?
At about 8 o'clock last night, which was within 5 minutes of the previous night's sort of start of the more active time, we received about 10 calls, and then we were hoping that maybe it was subsiding as we hadn't received any calls throughout the night, which had been common the previous two nights. However, this morning at approximately 10 minutes to 5, we received 25 calls of similar descriptions, people hearing booming, rattling, pounding noises in a series of two or three at a time.
And you described this. You've experienced this. You described it like a jackhammer.
It's it's not a jackhammer in the sense of a constant sort of a, if you were a pound to pound to pound, but it's that feeling like a jackhammer would give you when it hits the earth, but just in a one or two. When I was actually experiencing it, it was just one loud bang and the floor sort of rattling as if a jackhammer near you had hit the ground.
What are your feelings this morning? Are you uneasy? Are you frightened? Are you amused with all the attention the city is getting?
Certainly we would like to be able to answer the citizens' questions. No one wants people to feel frustrated and unsafe. And obviously as city officials, we're used to dealing with emergencies, but we're also used to be able to figuring out what the situation is. And so certainly the level of frustration for people is higher than it should be and that we would want for our community.
Well, this started on, if I'm reading this correctly, on Sunday night.
Correct.
And just kept on going periodically with the spurts of several hours in between, but it's I heard it quieted down a little bit. 11:15 last night was like the last one until you said again this morning. What has been ruled out so far?
We've ruled out things like our water and sewer system, elevated gas levels within those underground systems. We have a dam and a closed landfill that we have confirmed are not moving, do not have elevated levels of, say, methane gas at the closed landfill. We have spoken to the military. We've spoken to our own county and all counties around us that there's no mining, explosive devices, say from a pit or things like that. And again, the constant, even though it's not constant in terms of, you know, time after time after time, but the fact that it's been going on for 3 days is sort of rules all those things out. We've spoken to geologists from UW-Milwaukee and UW-Madison, and while people sort of have things that it might sound like from a geological standpoint, it clearly is not an earthquake. And it really doesn't fall within the exact definition of things like they call ice quakes and frost quakes, things like that, because it hasn't been getting cold at night. Although, again, it may just be chalked up to a natural phenomena that's happening under the earth because of this incredibly unusual weather.
Yes, that's what some of our listeners were theorizing, that it has something to do with the weather or, you know, the sudden warming. But my question for that is, why would it just be parts of the city of Clintonville and not other places?
And that would be my struggle from the geological standpoint, is you certainly can't quadrant off one quarter of our city and say that we are special geologically under the ground by substance and, you know, structure that is different than the entire rest of the state of Wisconsin. That just seems strange to me. And so then you sort of go back to what's unique here, and that's where you kind of lead back to our own utility systems, yet everything that we come up with, including speaking to the DNR and things like that, just comes up negative. And so, again, beginning the frustration level.
Well, you have a meeting tonight. Tell us about that.
We wanted to give the public an opportunity to speak to us, to hear from us directly.
I'm sorry,
so we have a meeting tonight at 6 p.m. at the Clintonville High School. We don't want people to think that we have this great amount of information that's new that we're going to provide to people. That's not the case. It's simply that we want to recap for them what we've done so that our citizens are assured that we're working on it, that they know the processes that we've gone through to eliminate things, and then, of course, give them an opportunity to get together to talk, to sort of get their frustrations out and ask us any questions that they have.
I wish you luck, and thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Lisa Kuss is administrator of the city of Clintonville. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.